going to be speaking about the logic and promise of integrated care systems for frail elderly people, international models and outcomes. How do I make this? How do I make get it to the next?
Dr. Acomo, you.
How do we get to the next slide?
C3.
This?
Oh. All right.
No.
Okay, somebody must push this.
Okay, so what did you do? What is it?
You have to push Enter key.
Okay, great. Well, we have 10 minutes, so there's not much we can really say about the context of integrated care, other than for those of us in the United States who think there's nothing we can learn from other parts of the world, which is a kind of a typical perception of American policymakers and practitioners in aging and other fields. It's very clear that the kinds of problems that we experience in our country with respect to long-term care, mental health services, and other services that are organized and delivered for special needs populations, vulnerable populations, have a set of unique problems with respect to fragmentation, lack of continuity. When you go to other places around the world, starting north in Canada, if you go to the UK, you go to most of Western Europe, you discover, in fact, that even though there is different policy structures, different ways of organizing, delivering health and social care, acute and long-term care services, to use the American terminology, you discover, in fact, that there are similar problems, that there is something unique about organizing, delivering services to complex populations, complex services to complex populations that confronts a series of very, very common problems, irrespective of the country or systems that you're talking about. Services are the responsibility of many jurisdictions, institutions, and professionals. The systems work in parallel, separate payment schemes, separate budgets, conflicting policies and regulations. And what's most interesting is that health and social care, acute and long-term care, are distinctly different in terms of the culture, the language, the professional roles and responsibilities, clinical approaches, service delivery methods. And this, in effect, accounts for the fragmentation that we find in long-term care and elsewhere. Now, care management or case management, for those of you that know the field of case management, I apologize. For those of you who are new to this field and don't know very much about case management, I don't really have time to talk about it. Bledden Davies is one of the British dons of certainly of case management, of care management research, to the extent that he's been able to help us understand what the impact of case management, or what some people call care management, has actually been. And Bledden, I think, fairly established in a very, very strong way that case or care management effect that helps long-term care clients remain in the community and also positively affects the efficiency and effectiveness of services that are provided to people who need these coordinated range or package of services. Care management is clearly pivotal to all kinds of services or services in the healthcare enterprise. But it's not a panacea. There was once this belief that all we needed is case management to rationalize the long-term care system, and it's very clear that, in fact, their long-term care is a very complex set of services. The people that need long-term care have a very complex set of needs. And David Chalice, another one of Bledden's colleagues, said that the breadth and complexity of long-term care for frail older people demands a much more comprehensive, holistic approach than is represented by case or care management alone as a and secondly, on the other side of the coin, that care management is too isolated to be fully integrative, especially for frail people whose needs cut across multiple service systems. So we have integrated systems of care. You know that in the United States there's been, we're seen for a very long time as the Silicon Valley of integrated care. Some people say that integrated care to a large extent really is very similar to the HMO model that we used to know in this country. You'll be familiar with kind of integrated or managed care models in the United States, the social HMO demonstration I was involved with early on, the PACE program, which is a permanent part of the Medicare Medicaid program, the Access Project in Rochester, New York, the Wisconsin Community Care Organizations. There's a whole list of models that are more or less fit into this rubric of integrated care. Someone, David, asked, well, what does integration really mean? And, of course, it's kind of a Rorschach test. If you say integration, you know, you hold up the ink blots and you ask people, what does it mean? And they'll tell you what it means to them. And I've made my own contribution to literature. I say it's the connectivity, alignment, and collaboration within and between to use the European words, the cure and care sectors. That is the long-term care sector, primarily social, driven by social need and physical need, versus the cure sector, which is the medical part of the healthcare enterprise. And this is at the heart of comprehensive long-term care. That integrated system of care entail, for the most part, creating single structures or entities to organize and manage medical and healthcare and social services needed by high-risk clients. They're known internationally as care networks. Chains of care is another terminology that's used frequently in Northern Europe. And these models, they're very, very broad and varied, and they share several characteristics of the focus and a specialization on a particular high-risk group. It need not be just a frail elderly. It could be chronically, persistently, mentally ill, for example. Enrollment or rostering of targeted population in the defined service or catchment area. Overall responsibility for arranging and or delivering a comprehensive service package, including the outcomes. Care provided and managed by an organized network of providers, not any provider in the community, but only the providers that choose to participate and were involved in organizing the delivery system, the integrated network, including the active involvement of the primary care physicians, the use of care management, interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary teamwork, and other techniques to achieve continuity, coordination, and the Dutch like to say, zorg op maat, tailor-made care is a Dutch term that's used very frequently to describe what we're trying to get at in terms of integrated care. Overall responsibility for arranging and delivering, oh, I did that already. And sometimes the devolution of financial responsibility for all care based on funds pooling from multiple budgets with or without prepaid capitation, although this is a very unique aspect of the American model, American experience. In fact, in European models, there's not always this emphasis on financing. The emphasis is on coordination and better integration and better outcomes. But financing is not always part of the model, and this might be very cultural. The Europeans don't loathe to talk about financing. It's always part on their it's on their minds, but they don't like to talk about it in the policy context. There are potential advantages, disadvantages. The advantages are, in theory, integrated systems of care enhance feasibility of seamless care. They maximize client-centeredness of multiple funding streams. They improve the impact of assessment and care planning. They facilitate integration of primary and secondary services. They help to optimize rehabilitation. They, in theory, these models prevent inappropriate hospitalization, institutionalization. And there are disadvantages. One, if you bring care and cure in one system, acute care with social services in one system, and mental health services, housing, that acute care is such a powerful part of the health system that there could be a tendency to overpower the social needs and priorities. And certainly if there is a financing integrated in the system under one roof, the health and social service financing, as we find in PACE and the social HMO and other kinds of models, that funds pooling can distort long-term care provision, potentially allowing medical care to siphon greater resources than they're actually needed. And the notion that medical care cost containment strategies may not fit with social services. And finally, it's difficult, certainly in the European context, not so in the U.S., we seem to have found some kind of a mechanism, difficult to develop a fair and balanced financing mechanism covering both medical care and social services. I want to say one thing at this point, that this is a discussion of structural approach to integration. In the literature of the U.K., they make a distinction between what's called joint working, or we call teamwork, and structural approaches, and we hardly see that in the literature of the United States. And most of the emphasis on integrated care in the United States is structural. Some people say it's rearranging the chairs in the deck of the Titanic, or in England they say rearranging the public furniture is another way of looking at it. Nick Goodwin talks about that in the UK. This is really a focus on structure. There's very little, and there's a very vigorous literature on team working, joint working in the UK, and what impact it has on integration and the outcomes as a result of integration, as distinct from structural approaches. I'm talking about structural approaches. Now, Walter, let me see. I guess it's not in this. For some reason, they downloaded it. How do I go back now? How do I go back? I'm sorry. Yes, go back. One more.
One more.
Yeah.
Page down.
No. Page back.
Page up.
Up. Okay. Good. Yes, I'm done. Thank you. Okay. There are three models I'll talk about very, very briefly. SIPA in Canada, the system of integrated services for people, aged people who lack autonomy. That's the translation of the French terminology for SIPA. It was a project in Montreal, Quebec between 1999 and 2001. It was inspired by the PACE model in the United States. This kind of, in the U.S., it was a daycare kind of based integrated care model here. It was a model that was structured or grafted onto what's called the CLSCs, which are community clinics. Quebec has a very different health system than most of Canada. They have a clinic-based system, so they use these clinics as the basis for an integrated delivery system. This was a major a randomized controlled trial. And here is some of the evidence, and you'll find there's mixed evidence in all these models. One, that SIPA was successfully grafted onto this community-based clinic system, that there was evidence of service and clinical integration, the result of what they speculated to be, based upon their qualitative studies, care management, interdisciplinary teamwork, protocols, and financial responsibility. There was weak physician collaboration. There was a reduction in hospital bed blockers by 50%. It was a major problem in Canada and Quebec, was that older people were awaiting placement in alternate levels of care in nursing homes. They couldn't find placement for them. They couldn't find a way of getting them to the community services. This reduced it by 50%. But there were no significant differences in emergency room, hospital, nursing home use. There was an increased home and community care use. There were no differences in medication use. And while there was high satisfaction and perceived quality of care by patients and carers, there were no differences in morbidity and health functional status, depression and cognition, and there were no cost differences between the experimentals and controls. Now, in Italy, the Rovereto project is northern Italy, and Italy has a structure of health and social service delivery for long-term care elderly, which is not unlike many other parts of northern Europe. The social services are the responsibility of the local municipalities, and the health services are the responsibility of the regional health authorities. That's the structure, the fragmented structure that is in place in Italy. And in the late 1990s, there was a demonstration, in effect, an experimental program of coordinated medical and social care for elderly home care recipients in northern Italy. There was community-based geriatric evaluation, there was care management, multidisciplinary teamwork, involvement of GPs, an agreement between the municipality and the regional authority to be part of the design. Geriatric evaluation unit was at the core of the system. It was the gatekeeper, the resource allocator, and the coordinator. There was co-collaboration between care managers and general practitioners. There was a reduction in hospital, significant reduction in hospital, nursing home admissions and length of stay. There was less physical and cognitive decline vis-a-vis the control group. And there was reduced total health costs versus controls. And this is fairly well, the literature, Burnaby and Landy and others talk about the great success of this Italian project, although some people have their suspicions about the quality of the research done here. But nonetheless, there's very positive results. Now, Australia, going to another part of the world, the Australian Department of Health and Aged Care conducted its first round of coordinated care trials in 1997 to 1999. The second phase is being done now. They're testing this idea of integrated care, and they define integrated care as a model which incorporated care management, the pooling of Commonwealth and state funds. Australia has a federal state structure like the United States, and general practitioner involvement. And the question was whether or not this structure could improve client health status and well-being without increasing resource use and costs. Of the 9 projects in phase 1, 4 were explicitly targeted to complex patients who were 65 and over. And what they found, again, was, I think, disappointing results for the money that was invested, a huge amount of money was invested in this project, that despite organizational designs, the projects were expected to incorporate these functions. And while they found some evidence of care management and funds pooling, clinical guidelines and protocols, improving service coordination and flexibility, there was no enhanced efficiency found. Community service use increased, but there was an inconsistent pattern across the trials. That there was service substitution that occurred, a hospitalization was reduced in some of the trials and not in others, some of the sites, not the others. And the qualitative evidence suggests that participants experienced increased well-being due to their access to care management. And costs, there were no across-the-board decline in total healthcare costs found. So let me just do the conclusions and lessons. I think that certainly there's pervasive logic and theory that lies behind this notion of integrated systems of care. But it's clearly a work in progress, and the brief travelogue I've just given you of models in three separate countries suggests without generalizing that these programs can be effective, that they can be associated with positive outcomes in terms of access, clinical coordination, continuity, health and functional status, service utilization, institutional placement, quality of life, care, burden, client satisfaction. But we really don't know, even when a model works, really what makes the model work. We really have no idea what aspects of the structure has what kind of impact on the outcomes we're talking about. So there's the literature, even in the United States, for PACE and for social age, among others, really doesn't talk about the structural elements and their impact on outcomes. And so you see the the umbrella organizational structure creates certain positive certain positive outcomes. The case managed multidisciplinary care does others. The organized provider network has other outcomes. The financial incentives have other outcomes. And one last thing, we need to get a better understanding of the relationships between structure and teamwork and services and outcomes. We don't really have that understanding in our literature, even in European and Australian literature. There needs to be a greater focus on client and user-defined outcomes. There's very little literature on outcomes from the point of view of people who use the services. It's always defined by administrators and system managers and policymakers. And we need to really figure out what are the levers to produce structural, clinical, and other changes in systems of care for older people that produce better services and results. Thanks.
Thank you, Dennis. We'll take two questions. Two questions. Susan?
In Italy, is there anything different about the system that you saw that may contribute to better outcomes?
The pasta was very good.
No.
First thing I find is that Bernabe is a very charismatic leader, and I recall years ago that Stan Wallach and others at Brandeis talked about the fact that we develop charismatic leaders develop these very innovative systems, and then when they seem to be successful, it's the regular people that get to now implement them, and maybe the outcomes are not the same. So it's hard to say whether or not this model reflected the leadership and the charisma and the strong relationships that this physician, geriatrician, medical professor had in that region. It is very, very positive results, and people are struck. How could Italians have the best results of the international literature? And they seem to have the best results, so we don't know. Maybe the pasta. Olive oil, maybe. Yes.
David?
Free elderly is a very, very, it's a definition.
Yes.
It's a basket into which a large number of people with multiple diseases and multiple combinations are set. And similarly, in the social area, you have, particularly when you have mental health, a broad array of problems in terms of taking care of people. My question for me is the reality of localized systems in which the health professionals on social professionals on either end of the spectrum can effectively take care of the range of people who fall into the physiologic definition of frail.
Well, so I think, first of all, I would probably apologize and say, had I redone my title, would say disabled elderly, and because I know the frailty has a connotation which is somewhat more complex and even subtle in some cases. It's a much more complex idea of what the problems that vulnerable older people face, and there's a whole group of people now, Howard Bergman at McGill and others, that are looking at frailty as distinct and separate from disability, disability being one component of frailty, but not by any means the only component. So I would say that one can define what are the things that make people disabled and need long-term care, and one can create localized structures, irrespective of the country, that really work in a way that keeps people in the community and keeps them out of nursing homes for as long as possible. Frailty is another question, I think. That's much more complex. The science of frailty is something we're beginning to look at now.
Let's give Dennis a big round of applause.